Discover new mind and body hacks to thrive as a human today. The Institute for Aliveness is here to teach you all the things you never learned in school. From talking poop, sex, childhood trauma, emotional intelligence, psychedelics, and of course, fasting and food. The graduates of this institute now steward the decentralized autonomous organization of TIFA. Join them as they share their journeys and host the most impactful and fun humans for you to learn from.
Hello, welcome, dear listener. This is Niketana from the TIFA headquarters. In this first episode of the new season for the Live for Vitality podcast, we welcome Dr. Andrea Page for a two-part interview. In this first part, we discuss the very beginnings, her very personal story of birthing the Institute for Aliveness and this podcast. We talk about the importance of full spectrum embodiment in health and the journey of self-realization through multiple death processes. Andy reflects deeply on the challenges and lessons learned from running TIFA and this ongoing hero's journey of self-discovery. I share my personal experience of going through the TIFA graduate program and also a 40-day silent retreat and the lessons that came from it. This conversation delves deeply into the aspects of personal growth, spiritual awakening, and what it means to be truly alive today. Enjoy.
Welcome, Andy, to episode one of season four of the refurbished, renewed, reinvigorated Vitality podcast.
Thank you.
So lovingly pioneered all these years. It feels exciting to be on this interviewing side, taking on this podcast and to have you here as a guest to interview. Thanks for being here and thanks for pioneering this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is, it's cool actually. I think it's probably season 8 or 9 by now, if I'm not mistaken. We'll have to look back. Yeah, but this podcast, it was never my idea to say, oh, I want to run a podcast. You know, it was before the podcast era. It was, it organically came from the lectures that I was doing every Monday night in Bali. And people would come and it would almost be like a church experience for them, where it was like every week they come on Monday. And of course, if people were just in Bali for a few months at a time, they would leave and they wanted this sense of like being able to take church home. And so I remember they were American, a group of young Americans asked me to start a podcast of just recording my lectures and then posting them so that they could feel like they were attending them from abroad. And so I did, and it became this very podcast, which has taken different journeys and forms over the years, and I'm really excited for all of you to carry it on.
Great. I love that. And it gives a sense of the history, the story of what viewers who have maybe been with you so far have been part of. And for those who are coming in new, to get a sense of what is it that they're coming into and what shape is it going to take. Seeing that you begin with the story of the podcast, I'm wondering if you could just tell us about the beginning. And there's so many parts to cover. Looking at, you know, of course, looking at the Institute for Aliveness and the journey with it as a big focus for this particular interview. But I think it would be nice to start a little bit with the personal story of. What brings you here? What's been some of the points along the journey that you feel to speak into today?
I never imagined that I would have a career in health. I never desired one. It was something that when I was practicing in Oroville as a naturopath at 21, I realized that what I was sharing and my capacity to share it in a way that people could take the knowing from their head into their body, embodiment, that it was something too good not to share. And it started to feel like a divine duty in a way. And so that rapidly escalated to having a career in my 20s, like someone in their 40s. And, you know, having the blessing to run the Wellness Center and extended programs at the largest retreat center in the world. And then, you know, I had my come to Jesus moment in my sudden return. It had been coming, but in my sudden return, I really sat with it, and I was like, why am I doing this? I've never wanted this. And this was at the time when, you know, wellness gurus jumped out of books onto YouTube and Instagram, and you know, for example, Atkins, or like any other name that you would know from the wellness industry from before, would have been more reserved. And at this point in time, in the 20 teens, it had become that the wellness gurus were faces that were talking, and they started becoming celebrities and public figures. And that was something that I was really uncomfortable with, because way before health was always yoga, spirituality, the enlightenment arts, for want of a better word, and the sense of non-personhood. And so the person forward approach of, you know, I could name some people, of so-and-so's, you know, diet health plan, or just this kind of guru head celebrity complex that 21st century humans have fallen into, even 20th century humans, really with the advent of film. We saw a massive focus upon an individual as some kind of godhead, and our demigods of today are celebrities. And so the way that that crept into the wellness scene, and it was no longer a focus on the individual and the individual's agency to take back their own power and to find their own answers inside. And rather it was this dogma, really, of someone outside and their perfect modeling. Like, there was just so much flawed in that model that I grew increasingly uncomfortable through my career, as people always wanted to blow me up and make me big. And I would always pull back the reins on any kind of marketing or any kind of me-focused thing. And so when I had my come to Jesus moment during my sudden return, as many know, about 3 months off grid and 40 days in silence to really sit with myself and know that my work is in this lifetime is meant to impact a much wider scale, and it's non-personal. And at that time I was clear that AI was going to be joining us shortly in human consciousness, and that it was the realm in which I wanted to proliferate this work, both from like a bliss, desire, excitement standpoint, as well as from a dharmic standpoint. There was a meeting point there where I've never really felt that meeting point in health. It's always been something that I could, like, people needed. It was never something I wanted to do. And so when I had decided to leave my career then at the end of 2017 and started my first AI company in 2018 and started working in the startup world for the next 2.5 years, there was a big gaping hole that I saw and I felt in the wellness industry, in alternative medicine and health. And that was full spectrum embodiment of these principles, where they're not things outside of us or practices we do or breakfasts we eat or morning routines or these externalized things, but it was really a deeply transformative process wherein we change our relationship with ourself, we change our relationship with our life story, we change our relationship with everyone in our life, we change our relationship with the spatial environment, and ultimately we change our relationship with nature and the natural world, and a relationship with the ethos of existence itself and why we're here, the existential questions. And through that transformation, health arrives, you know, and it arrives in different ways. I don't know if you've heard, but we've just gotten word that one of the Tifa students got her period back after a long, 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 long time. And so things like that, mm-hmm. where the body comes back into equilibrium, and it takes time and it takes deep emotional work. That might look like shadow work. It takes a sense of perseverance. And trust and a different relationship to dis-ease or imbalance or uncomfortable situations. That's what dis-ease is, out of ease, discomfort. And so through changing how we relate to all of those things I mentioned before, health, which is balance, is found in a different way. And this is, yeah, this is really what I was trying to communicate all through my 20s and through my career. And when I didn't see that perspective shared anywhere or felt anywhere, I felt this massive responsibility to birth a generation of revolutionaries who would shift this perspective. And thus Tifa was born. And against all the odds, probably the biggest of the odds being my own resistance and not wanting to do it. And I think that the reason that I kind of tried to bury it for 2.5 years was because something inside me knew how difficult the journey would be for me. And with 2020, knowing astrologically, you know, studying the astrology of 2020 for 4 years before that, it would be the most pivotal year in human existence, and that it would be this turning point because of the planetary conjunctions in Capricorn. That was the year that I knew that this consciousness, and Tifa is a consciousness, wanted to come down or needed to come down or should come down. I'm not sure of the wording, but it was the time in which I guess I surrendered enough to open to allow for it. And I suppose the podcast has always been this take it home, put it in your pocket. Whether it was Live for Vitality, which was my campaign, you know, in my old career, I'd never wanted my name in it. It was like Live for Vitality. It was a message to the listeners that this is about you, and it's about you orienting the reason for your life, for vitality, rather than other, whether it's material gain or relational gain or, it's that sense of aliveness that I do truly believe will be our currency in the future, because it is something that we can spend, and it is something we can waste, and it is something that we can build. Right? In the same way as money, and ultimately when all material possessions are either fabricatable through a 3D printer or, tarnished like water tables of nature, at some point in time we come back to the root source, which is prana, life force energy of existence. And when we learn to create an economic system around prana, right? You can think of like Gen Z, good vibes only. You know, it's like we only take that kind of prana here. I do believe that we'll find a way to transact and have deep value in that sense of aliveness, that at the end of the day, when all is through and through, that which will be valuable will be aliveness. And so,
It's in a way that word aliveness, it's been the, well, as a graduating TIFA member, it's been.
Congratulations.
Thanks. I think for me, the past couple of years, the word aliveness has taken on so many different meanings and in such an embodied way through this journey, through this year and a half course that was in some ways the heart of Tifa, even if perhaps it touched in a way the least number of people that Tifa has been in its wide scope of what its activities it touched, you know, a handful of people what, 50, 70 people who enrolled in it, you know? And yet it took us to such a depth and it took us through such a journey. And I'm including you in it very much so as part of that journey. And that word aliveness still keeps ringing as we continue this journey forward after graduation, after, you know, the next steps that we will speak into. And I guess it's a calling into, yeah, what can you speak more into this word aliveness and into how the Institute for Aliveness really, what did it speak into about that through all its multiple threads, you know?
I just want to look up the etymology of it. For some reason, I've never done that. I can say, I guess, that the name, the Institute for Aliveness, came out when I was in Spain in 2019 in the summer, July. I was blessed to spend, I think, almost a month or 2 weeks off-grid in the mountains of eastern Spain at the house of a friend of mine. Gorgeous, striking location overlooking like ridges, and really, I suppose, allowed myself to open more deeply to what wanted to come through. And so it wasn't so much like an ideation process as much as it was a deep understanding that this would be a proper institute, you know, which now, obviously, as we're in discussions of legally founding it as a university, that there was this sense of seriousness to the scholarly study. And rather than studying the world outside of us, it would be a study of the human experience, but applying the same kind of scientific rigor, and thus embodied research becomes born through TIFA. And so I found the etymology, I'll share that. It's aliveness, noun, life, vigor, state, or condition of being alive, 1853, from alive plus ness. And the root word for alive is vive, which is not surprising, from Latin, like viva. Life, alive, lively. So, there's a Hebrew name, Aviv, which, I never connected that before. It's beautiful. When the name, the Institute for Aliveness, came, it wasn't a cerebral process. It was an understanding that this is, it's like banal. It's like the Institute for Shoemakers. You know, it's like, it's very clear who this is for, what we're doing here. And even though aliveness is this intangible, ideated concept, that was what the Institute was to be wrapped around. And so actually, I love that the etymology of it is so banal, of alive plusness. and you know, it's... it was always meant as well, this is a little bit of my tongue-in-cheek sassy part, but it was meant to be a commentary on how many people today are walking around very disconnected, and that disconnection is a little bit like a plant pulled up from the earth. There's a sense of deadness or dyingness in that. And so as an acknowledgement to that, it was this stark contrast of what if we, rather than die more throughout our lives or get closer to death, what if we become more alive? And sometimes that happens through small death processes. A la hero's journey. So, I remember facing resistance from day one when I asked my, at that time, Live for Vitality audience what they thought about the name, the Institute for Aliveness. And I'll never forget my aunt, who is, you know, one of my heroes and a very dear person, was like, "I don't like it." Okay. But I even to that doubt and resistance, I knew that it's what it had to be. And again, it was not the Institute of Aliveness. It was the Institute for Aliveness. And that was very intentional. That slight grammatical difference. And I suppose the name concretized, landed deeply when I looked it up, right? And you have Tifa Lockhart, the fantasy football player, which is our only real SEO competitor, but she's quite big, so we're not gonna try to kick a ball to her back and forth.
A prime example of aliveness.
Yeah, maybe, perhaps. There could be something there, a partnership brewing. But there is the Greek word theophania, which when abbreviated is Tifa. And so it's this, it's a concept. I'm not sure if I would call it a god, like a Greek god, but it's part of Greek mythic lore. And the word theophania means manifestation of God. And so when this acronym Tifa had come out and I looked it up and I had this sense of this is what it is. And then I looked that up. I was like, oh, okay, thanks for confirming that. And it was a sense of like, all right, you know, you follow the crumbs, the pebbles on the path. You don't know where you're going with it, but it reveals itself. And so, yeah, that's a little bit about aliveness. I guess that, like the answer that anyone who's been a seasoned podcast listener has heard me say, is that I have a strong belief in that sense of curiosity and wonder and excitement for life, a sense of vigor, aliveness that a six-year-old jumps out of bed with, that is something that is available to us throughout our entire life. And it's not something that we leave in childhood. And so it's that sense that I aim to reconnect people with. And obviously fasting is a massive portal to regain, really clarify and move away anything that's leeching aliveness. So that people can come back in source with prana, with life force. So,
Beautiful. Thanks, Andy. And I can attest to the fact that we played with aliveness from the other end of meeting death constantly through the year and a half, where we were taken through a very scorpionic journey. I think scorpionic is a key word, where we played with aliveness very seriously, as it were, and at the same time, discovering the many facets of what that meant from body to mind to something much bigger and larger than the individual. And and I think we're still playing with it. What does aliveness mean? What does the Institute for Aliveness really stand for? And it does feel like something that's a holder for something larger. And perhaps that's where that's the North Star through which we move through the next steps of, you know.
I love that, the holder, the container, that deep is the container. And it's, prana exists everywhere, and yet it's harnessed by a body, by a container, whether that's a plant or an animal or a human. It's a sense of harnessing. I wanna pick up the scorpionic thread for anyone who might not have been exposed to the work of Daniel D'Amario, my first astrology teacher, and share that his phrase of Scorpio is going to the edge of aliveness for aliveness's sake. And so that sense of going to the edge of aliveness, which is also the edge of death. And so this is someone speeding very fast on a motorbike. right? And feeling the intensity. And often Daniel says about Scorpio, you don't know how far is too far until you've gone there. Mm. And so there's this sense of risk in aliveness. And there is this other very clear consequence and reward of death. And then it is through death processes, through underworld journeys, a la, again, Joseph Campbell's hero's journey of crossing thresholds, which are the edge of aliveness, into a different reality. And I didn't construct this at the beginning. I didn't know that TIFA would be a hero's journey course. It's something that came through as it was being built, and not came through like, oh, I'm thinking of this, this is a good idea, but like, oh, I understand why this piece is here, and I understand how it connects to that piece. And then through the years, I got better at listening to how people would interact with pieces and thus explaining it, and became a better guide for the journey itself.
I'm trying to feel into which threads to pull on for the next parts of this conversation.
Pull on them all!
So many beautiful ones. And I wrote my end of course thesis on TIFA. I think for myself, I needed to look at this course that I had been a part of and try to understand what of it so deeply impacted me, and also understand from the students and from you and from Jenny, who was Jennifer Pipolo, who is a big part of the course, as well as our trauma-informed coach, as it were, who and try and get a sense of what it was that from the history of the course to its ongoing journey, what the lessons were, you know. And I say the course, but of course it talks into TIFA as a wider institute as well. And I guess I'm always curious about, you know, on a wider scale, these bigger containers have their own journeys, have their own stories, have their own, their own hero's journey, as it were, as TIFA has had. And there is also the people, the individuals who populate it, who birth it, who undergo their transformational journeys through it. And each of them has a perspective, has a story, has such a part of the piece of the puzzle to share, you know. And I was very curious about it when I was doing my research. And I guess, you know, I have in a way, there are two questions. What has been the hero's journey of TIFA, you know, and what's been your hero's journey through it? Because I do feel they both have a relevant, something relevant for the listeners.
Oh la la, big question. Thank you for mentioning your master's thesis. I hope we link it here. It is something that I felt so, I don't know if I'm using this word properly, but gratified by, like so grateful for, on behalf of TIFA. It was like this, like, in many ways, it's like the sense of a cherry on top. And really, I hope, and I trust that it will be just the beginning of studies, more studies, further studies of transformative containers. Because the art of transformative work is not one that many people practice today. And when you think of professions, it should maybe be the highest paid job. You know, in many ways, it is the most valuable, because, you know, what else is worth it? And so throughout my career of teaching yoga teacher trainings or guiding fasting retreats or teaching like TIFA, the biggest feedback that I always got, and somehow became immune to, was, I can't tell you how much you've changed my life, right? That sense of profound transformation, which isn't something that you can buy because it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of undesirable discomfort, dis-ease, unease. And it needs guides who are there for the transformation itself rather than to play into people's stories that are pawing towards comfort. So when you were asking the question, I was actually thinking of the Tifa backend staff. And we had so many over the years that helped. I nearly killed myself. That's the whole joke that many of my friends know. For building the Institute for Aliveness, I nearly died. Right, the sense of deep burnout. And yet I trust that. And when I'm explaining how I've spent the past 4 years of my life to someone in a mainstream world, I say that I was a startup entrepreneur. I was a solo founder, which is definitely one of the hardest jobs there's ever been, because you wear a million hats and you're working at all hours of the day and giving everything you have. And then I was a startup founder, as if that wasn't enough, solo founder, in the vertical of human development and personal transformation, which embedded in it is a tremendous amount of transference and spiritual community rifts and all of these things which are so documented throughout time, drama, one could say. And so the personal impact was very strong, and I can go into that more as you wish. But I was sharing a little bit about the back-end staff that helped me build Tifa. And there was Jelly, a Filipino mother of four at that time, and she was only 26, who really helped me launch the first iteration of Tifa, and she was a badass. I mean, you can imagine mother of four. And in launching it, she also said, "This is too much," and I said, "This is too much. Never again will I hire a mother of four young children." And so with gratitude, she stepped out, and pretty soon thereafter, who stepped in was Leia, who had worked for an American nonprofit before and wanted to stay in nonprofit work and just had a heart of gold. And she was also a mother, but a mother of a little bit older of children, also in the Philippines. And she was really this rock. She had this solid energy that that I knew I could rely on. And so that, to me, was everything. It was huge. And eventually, after a year and a half with us, Leia decided to go back to law school to become a lawyer. And so there became this theme of, as it always was with my career, even before when I had assistants, of people working in the field would do the self-work, would do the ask themselves the deep questions and in many ways make their own dreams come through that transformational process. And I suppose the third and last one I'll share, because we had many, many, many employees, amazing humans, is Michael, who ran our media for more than 2 years. And I hired him straight out of teenage years. I think he was 22 when he started. And he had never really had a real job before. I think he worked at a call center, and I took a leap of faith because I saw a really honest, loving heart in front of me. And I knew that the work that he was doing technically would be things that he could learn on the job. And I think when he left, he must have been making more than twice the salary of when he came in. And I had the beautiful opportunity to actually meet him in Manila in person about just a month ago, exactly. And through the journey of working for Tifa and the initiation, he healed his own psoriasis. Before that, he wasn't going outside, had a very limited life. He had a girlfriend who then became his wife last year, and now they're pregnant and expecting a baby. And when we shut down operations last June, so that everyone could take a deep needed rest, the new job that he got was also in wellness, which I think they probably saw his work resume and took him, and he's doing incredible. And he's really thriving. And we had a really sweet moment there about him essentially thanking me for believing in him. And so there's this essence of kind of hosting someone for, like you say, the holding space, a container for transformation. There's nothing more priceless than that. It is the soil in which we grow. And yeah, a lot of the world today is, you know, short courses because humans don't have attention span, or quick fixes, or one-off retreats. And those spaces are so much easier to run because it's a hello, goodbye. we don't really have time for drama right now. Hold that in for another 3 days because then it'll be over. And that lack of continuity was something that I really saw missing in the world of transformation, because as one of my teachers, Suzanne Rosgaard, says, things take time. And that was a lesson that I think I had to learn through Tifa. Because I tend to be someone who wants so much, so fast. And that's my Venus 1 degree of Aries nature. And whereas I had probably a mental understanding of the need for transformation to not only take time, but also to be put upon a human timeline of threshold experiences, astrologically, if nothing else, that we are meant to go through at certain ages. Like I mentioned, the Saturn return already. And there's many of these thresholds that each human faces throughout their timeline of life. And I had that understanding on a mind framework, but I didn't have it embodied. And Tifa really showed me that time and time and time and time and time again. What is the capacity for human self-realization? Yeah. And that was hard. You know, it's always hard to be taught lessons. It's always hard to be taught lessons when you really don't. You think it's something else. It's not that. No, come on. They can do it. Why don't they see it? Right. I had so many moments of that kind of frustration through the years. But I learned so much about the human experience. And I think more than anything, I learned about the underbelly of trauma of the human experience. And really the second year when Jenny started participating in more, and we had a class of people who came as my teachers in so many ways of starting to understand the neurochemistry of early childhood complex trauma, and would require me to be triggered right and left because it was all personal attacks and kind of a like reputational homicides continuously, and to surrender into that and learn and listen and of course do my own work and know where it's like this is part of the game. Like Bob Hoffman says, everywhere I go, everything I see mommy and daddy looking back at me. And so this sense of transference, which is huge, of how I step in to play mommy and daddy for everyone if I am the primary space holder for a transformative journey. And and it's a lot. It's a lot. I remember actually when I was doing the Hoffman process, there are active transferences that you get to write out. I don't know, I'm probably sharing information I shouldn't share about the process, but you get to read your transferences to the people onto whom you've transferred. And having a five line in human design, anyone who knows anything about human design, which I've learned a tremendous amount about from Lucas, another TIFA graduate, over the past year. The five line is the line on which onto which people project, and that's good projections as well as bad projections. And I'm sure there's tons of people listening to this podcast who only have good projections on me because, you know, they saw me in Bali and it was distant and there was not real personal work, or it was short, it was 1 week, and so they just all the good projections, right? And then those who are doing deeper work over a longer period of time, it's also all the bad projections. It's all the projections. And so to sit with that, when I was doing the Hoffman process I was sharing, they would do, like, you could have up to three transferences. Like, everyone shared one and received one. But maybe people would have more for one person. And so when they got to like three or four transferences, they would say, do you want another one? Like, you know, I think I got to four. I think there were only two of us in the group. And I was like, yeah, yes, it's okay. Yes, I can. And they were like, why are you doing this to yourself? And I was like, well, this is nothing compared to my day job. And so, but that sense of like, why are you doing this to yourself? Came up so many times. And the only thing I could ever equate it to was a mother in labor. That sense of, why are you doing, like, this is the most painful thing ever. And yet, a baby's born, new life, aliveness comes from it. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess to finish, the journey of building TIFA in the first 4 years was a journey of my own facilitation mastery to a much deeper level. I had been great and highly well attuned at holding space and being professional and I got so much more attuned to walk people through the dark. And to also see and feel when people aren't ready or aren't capable to walk through the dark for whatever reason, and to not make that wrong. I think that was one of my biggest lessons. For a long time, that would be wrong to me, that they don't want to do the work. They would close their laptop and walk away. And through the third year, a sense of deeper humility and compassion arose, of acknowledging either it wasn't people's time or it wasn't, you know, I wasn't the right person, or they simply, on a neurochemical level, weren't capable. And that's a huge lesson that I learned through TIFA, because there's only so much we can do digitally. A lot of deeper transformative work, especially for people who had high adverse childhood experience scores and had many rocks in a rocky childhood, there's a glass ceiling. It's not possible to do this work online when it's theoretical and highly intellectual or mental. The embodiment journey needs to be somatic. It needs to happen from the body, not entering from the mind. And it requires in-person trust and touch and sensitivity over a long period of time with a practitioner. And so I think I would say one of the greatest successes of TIFA was figuring out who we could not serve. Because this work, right, you know the preciousness of it, I know the preciousness of it. Anyone who's been able to complete a hero's journey, at least one cycle in Tifa of it, knows the preciousness of it, and yet it's not for everyone. And at a much more naive time in my career, I would have said, this is for everyone. Everyone needs this. Mm. Very adamantly. And that's not possible. And it's also not the case.
Mm. I remember in my research, seeing that there was a certain group of people that thrive better in these sort of online self-development courses than others. Mm. And at the basic requirement outside of being able to give the time, energy, to have a little bit of financial independence enough to be able to do something like this, to commit a year and a half to such a deep journey. Outside of that, one needs a certain level of emotional intelligence, to have done a little bit of this work themselves, you know, to come into it, being able to hold themselves when things get so dark and stuff comes up that, wow, you know, you're angry all over the place. You're, yeah. How does one hold themselves in a space like that? And oftentimes we put it outside, of course, fairly so, mommy and daddy screwed us up, you know. and yet, we impact each other through these journeys. And yeah, definitely emotional intelligence was a key finding of what's needed. And I'm trying to think of some of the other factors. I know Tifa had a few sort of core requirements, you know, being able to meet the academic work, because as much as this was about self-work and a lot of people were there to do self-work, it also required a certain amount of academic commitment and the ability to want to be a scientist, you know, not only of one's own psyche, but also to go beyond that, to look at the body, to look at the mind, and yes, academic competence to a certain level, or at least the wish to be competent, and the willingness to find out how to be, seemed to me to be key. Yeah, can you speak into a few more? Of somebody who's listening to this and thinking, hey, I want to do something like this. Give me the dark and the dirty, you know?
You say that now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we definitely had specific requirements that we would develop over the years to find out who had success. But I think what's relevant for now, because the structure of the course will drastically change, mm-hmm. Is to speak into the perhaps the why of the changes. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to make any formal announcements, because the course continuation team in the Tifa DAO core still has, you know, things to solidify. But I can probably speak into it a little bit in terms of the learnings mm-hmm. from the 18-month program. And while you were speaking, something came clear, which I'm sure we'll get into or mention, but in terms of these ingredients for quote unquote success, and success in this case means profound personal transformation, time, stability, financially, the desire, the ability to metacognate, to look at oneself, and there's like a certain agility there, and we build it. It's a muscle. We build it throughout Tifa. We term it as things like leaning in or sandboxing, this sense of when you want to run away, really sitting there and realizing, okay, I want to run away, but it's not because this is bad or this person or situation is wrong. I want to run away because this person or this situation is bringing up something inside of me that I've spent my whole life running from. And this is my chance to sit with it and look at it. And so many people didn't take that chance because I'm so easy to project onto, or Tifa, or, you know, Jenny, or whatever the situation is. And my journey of having to come to be okay with that, and also learning, taking tremendous data points about those people and, you know, what brought them to the beauty of where they sat, where it wasn't their time. You know, was it age? Was it a different demographic? Et cetera, et cetera. And deep trust in the universe that whatever Tifa did bring up in them, however painful it might have been, was for their growth. And that everyone, all of us, anyone involved in this project will look back 30, 60, 90 years from now, depending on how long, you know, technology keeps us alive, will look back and understand the magic of it. Because that's, you know, that's what a field is. When something like this is born and it's not one individual human's idea of what would be a good idea, but rather it's something so dharmic that it pushes itself through into existence, like it's here for a reason. And many times throughout the journey, I was like, my life would be so much easier if I just let this die and walked away. And my human, my ego would very much prefer that. Like it'd be so much better. But the sense of aliveness, right? This fighting force of effervescent desire to live is definitely a quality of Tifa. And so another ingredient that I was going to add to the mix and I thought of while you were speaking was community. Yeah. The heavily international, multicultural aspect of Tifa was something that was a byproduct of both my own life and the fact that I've spent the past 17 years traveling to more than 100 countries, learning several languages, working, studying, being in cultures, and thus meeting people all over. But also the nature of Bali and my career there, of having the whole world at your doorstep, right? That sense of being a global destination point. And what that afforded in Tifa, as you know, is that on any one call, we would usually have people from most continents. We were highly underrepresented in Africa. And we tried to change that, but it's not ready, or it's not desired, or maybe it's not meant to be. And the magic of, especially riding through COVID, with so many different people all over the world, and understanding and hearing regulations and people's conceptualization of this rapid change in existence, was precious. It was this precious little meeting point. And so the highly international aspect of community, of how all of these mirrors, which are a reflection back of me to me, right, and you to you, are also like tinted different colors. And it makes the journey so much more interesting than if you're going through the journey of people who are the same as you is, and they've had the same lifestyle as you. And I think it probably required a whole different sense of cultural sensitivity that was in many ways a prerequisite of Tifa. And I would say that the Tifa students did very, very, very well at that, and came in with this sense of multicultural attunement. So the community, though, I want to mention is a integral ingredient, because not only are they playmates to play in the sandbox with, people to trigger you and to hold your hand through the journey, to mirror you, but also it creates this field of transformation whereby when an individual is starting to reconceive of life differently and themselves differently, they're not doing it alone. And so it becomes a norm in this cohort, in this group together. There becomes a norm of transformation, so that when an individual, because it's an online program, is in their life back home with all the people around them who aren't changing so fast. And of course, they're all changing. They're going through the benchmark threshold experiences of their life timeline, but they're not doing it in this, as we called it, pressure cooker kind of way, right? And you're changing so much, and so your perception of reality is changing so much. It's really integral to have the group of people who are also having the change be the norm, the transformation be the norm. And so that was an undeniable ingredient. And you know, we have data on this as well in terms of those who were able to stay in would lean into their community and the people with whom they were going on the journey, and those who kept distance for whatever reason, a lot of it was age. There's so much wisdom there. At older ages, people do know better and they think they know better, right? So it's like it's a double-edged sword, because there is a wisdom that comes with age. But if that wisdom, which it can and will in everyone, becomes, I don't need this, I know better than this, these people are young, or whatever the story is, then it can distance one from that transformative force field of the community. The 18 months was, I don't know why, I have no memory or recollection of any active thought of why that's the number, or what will happen with that. It was definitely an intensive, and the design, for anyone who doesn't know, of the first 3 years of the course was 12 months of content and then 6 months of independent study. And Jenny had said to me sometime a year or two ago that independent study is an incredibly advanced, refined practice, that it takes someone with a tremendous amount of self-stewarding ability and discipline, and just general refinement in their life and way of being, to be able to do independent self-study. And so at that point, we decided to hold a much tighter container for the second year, which worked out well. And we had super high graduation rates for the third class. And in many ways, TIFA, the first 3 years, was an experiment of third time's the charm, of how much can we learn from the first 2 years to change the container and provide it with everything we can, so that we will factor in for success. All of that, everything happened in the way that it needed to, that it had to. So the 18 months, which in hindsight were two gestational periods, 9 months of rebirthing the self and 9 months of learning to communicate that in the world outside, were, you know, I'm using all of these spiritual materialist terms. They were by divine design. Right. I know I would never say these things, but at a root level, that's really what it was. And yet there was this tremendous exhaustion that came, often because of people's lack of focus. I do think that if people were disciplined and were dosing themselves, the course as it was intended to be, which was an hour, give or take, a day, 5 days a week, 3 weeks out of the month, that it would be this well-paced thing. But what ended up happening was life got in the way, which is very normal and very human. So people would often get behind and need to rush to catch up, and there would be these like self-stewarded intensives that would exhaust. And so what was very clear was that it was just too much. It was too much too fast, even though that sense of pressure cooker, where it is tremendous amount of pressure in a condensed period of time, is often what cooks food or humans the fastest.
And I think to add into that, I think what the languaging of the world today is really follow your bliss and, you know, go things at your own pace and go slow. And there is something really precious to that, to taking care of the nervous system while you do the things you do. But I think as we spoke into the scorpionic aspect, I think what was really unique and interesting and special about the Stifa experience was how challenging it was. And, you know, it's refreshing to be challenged. It's refreshing to be held to a standard that one aspires to meet and feels like on one level, oh, I don't think I can do it. And then to do it and to get there. I don't think one can gain that sense of, is it agency? I don't know what it is, but that sense of self-empowerment that comes from being challenged and meeting that challenge and being able to, to take it on and do it. I don't think I can underline enough how precious a gift that is for those that need that, you know? And it's not to undermine the other approach at all. And yet, in this dance between polarities, I think this particular one has lost emphasis in modern times as something that's quite precious for the human growth journey, you know?
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I'll call in another of our 2022 student, Terio's final thesis, which was all about that exact theme, about is, for true transformation, is difficulty and hardship required? Is it just a Sisyphean notion, or is it pushing through thresholds for breakthroughs? Because if we stay in the bliss, which I want to speak on, we're not confronted by the things that will actually grow us. It's a much slower path. It's a path that organically follows the timeline. But it's, one could say, not fast enough for humans today. And that's I think been something that's been very, very clear for me since I was a young teenager, the need for expediting of consciousness at all levels amongst humans today in our economy of destruction.
Yeah. And I think we're afraid to hold ourselves to higher standards, you know.
Yeah. And there was always a double-edged sword to that, being Tifa's theme, holding higher standards for humanity. And there's a lot of personal work that I've had to journey through in looking at how my own patterns and complexes imprinted, whether it be the languaging of Tifa or the attitude of more, stronger, harder, and the ways in which I'm just primed as a human and were incredibly successful and efficient for me, and that not being the case for everyone. You know, I went to my master's in the UK rather than the master's in Hawaii because it was 1 year versus two, right? So this sense of desire, it's a hunger, it's a desire to expedite and a hunger for more, faster. And yet, as you bring in the nervous system, this is ultimately, at the end of the day, the attunement to the nervous system is the most important thing. And yet, if people stay in an expanded field, they won't meet the threshold moments because the threshold moments are moments of contraction so that there can be more expansion after. And this is polarity. And I know very clearly that the field that I hold in transformation is the threshold. It's the contracted field where you have the positive and negative charges. And one has to go across it. It's not this, you know, more relaxed. Doesn't that feel good? And bliss is such an interesting word, as we know in Sanskrit, ananda, this sense of being taken over by divine oneness and the incredible permeable love that is everything that we are and everything that we ever have been and everything that we will be, that we forget about. As we lose ourselves in that, this is what we call bliss. And yet, the bliss that many people are much more versed in today is some form of contrived hedonism. It's the ego's desireful chase for what feels good. and we've mistaken where the placement of bliss is meant to sit. It is meant to sit with the spirit, not the ego.
Yeah. We're in, and it's such a hall of mirrors, this world we're dancing in, because it's at every level we think, I speak for myself. I think I know the truth. And at every level I find out, there are a million ways I can deceive myself, and the world so beautifully provides those ways. And on top of that, it's also realizing in how many ways language itself is a hall of mirrors. From the words and the things that we think mean the things they mean. Increasingly along the journey, I find out the hilarity of the fact that bliss takes on its complete opposite meaning when we follow it in that journey of self-gratification, you know. And true bliss means, well, I'm still discovering it, but it's definitely not the bliss that feels like it's a protracted, never-ending joy. And this hall of mirrors, it needs, and I think it comes down to what is it to go on a journey like the 18-month with the Tifa, or to go on any self-empowerment journey. I think it's, and I think you spoke into that. It's, you know, yes, the time, the desire, the time, the space, the money, the, you know, the emotional intelligence, whatever it is. But ultimately, it comes down to a very strong aspiration, I think, of wanting to. I remember for myself, it was like, I'm so sick of myself. Oh my God, this, whatever this is, I just want it all stripped. You know, and at every moment when I felt like running away, or I came close to running away, it was like every time the mirror showed me, oh, and I think at some points it was you, you're not looking at this part of yourself, and it's like, oh, fuck off. I don't want to look at this anymore. I'm done. I'm good. Okay, I'm enlightened. I don't need anymore. And it's the journey is never done. And I think that's the lesson. It's to constantly aspire to know that we are in this hall of mirrors, and it gets subtler and subtler the ways we can deceive ourselves, and to constantly play that game of, ooh, let me try and look a bit deeper and look a bit closer, language, life, whatever. I think that's one of the things we really played with in this journey, and that was truly profound. I want to, we're an hour and a bit into this conversation, and we've spoken a lot, so much into this journey that's come through Tifa on a principal level, on a personal level, on a transpersonal level, you know. And I'm curious, as we perhaps move into the second part of the conversation, unless you feel to add more into what we've spoken into, where are we going? You know, what's happening now?
First I want to kind of close that last piece and honor your sharing of the beauty of the journey and the subtle refinements. I remember learning about Socrates at the age of, I don't know, 13, 14, and the Socratesian notion of you don't know how much you don't know until you start to learn a little bit. That is the mind cave of Tifa. And so much of that deals with deconditioning and with looking at patterns. And in my health career, it was about re-examining how you know what you think you know, and that those are often the blocks to true, deep, embodied learning. Our other phrases, don't verify me, don't believe me, verify me, right? The sense of actually working with this tangibly. And I think there's something to be acknowledged about a spiritual awakening, which is, like meditation, something that one shouldn't talk about, because then they miss the point. And yet there is this moment, a snap of a finger, when people, any human throughout their life, has the ability to realize deeply that life is not happening to them, but through them, and that they are here for a much bigger purpose than their mind will allow them to perceive. And that through connection into the heart space and life beyond life, before, after, there's this sense of awakeness or aliveness that can happen throughout the human journey. And that spiritual awakening whereby we realize we are not in control, and yet we have agency on our perception, that moment in time it's like a little sparkling of magic that really only happens once, and that there's a before and there's an after. And I suppose what I want to share is that after, that's when training time begins. Because before that, it was all, you know, fun and games and hedonism and adventure. And after that, it's fun and games and adventure with a lot more self-awareness. And the more time one spends in the gym, working out, building the muscle, right? The more toned they'll be, the more evenly distributed the muscle, the stronger they'll be, right? And on the spiritual road, of the more time one has spent post-spiritual awakening moment, the more aware one will be able to be in these subtle experiences. And so it was quite clear that those who were newer to that sprinkling moment in time of the spiritual awakening would have higher highs and low lows, lower lows. And it was clear that those who had that, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that it would be much more subtle, as you describe. And so I want to acknowledge that. And it's the only verbiage that I've been able to develop around it is we don't all start at the same starting line in Tifa, in life, and anywhere. And to deeply acknowledge that is the power, because there were several moments, and there continue to be several moments, where when people are at different stages of their training, as it were, people at an earlier stage will want to call out people at a more refined stage. People at a more refined stage will look at people at an earlier stage as if they're looking down, like, I've been there. Come on, you know? And so it's, there's complexity that's woven through. Yeah.
And for myself, a deep compassion, actually.
I guess if I could offer a question for anyone listening, you know, we have many questions in Tifa, and I hope that soon we start to publish those little question card decks. We have one for family, we have one for friends, we have one for intimate relationships. But a question that I would add to that list is, when was your spiritual awakening? You know, that sense of meeting people from there. So it's like, when did you start training in the gym? And then you like on one level, just like muscles, you can see it when you sit with someone, you can feel it. You know, I can walk into a room and make eye contact with someone, and then through that silent eye contact, there's this deep understanding of, oh, this is someone who's highly refined in their training in the gym. You know, and it's not because they're wearing a mala or they're sitting in meditation or they're burning incense. You know, it's a whew, embodied sense of that's someone who remembers the cosmic joke of existence and who's willing to lean in and yet has the grace and the poise developed through training in the gym for so long. And So I guess if we finish out this little first segment, if you want to answer the question of when was your spiritual awakening?
I thought I had a moment. When I see that it's been a long training. I had it, if I can think of it as a clear moment during TIFA, the process, the 18-month process, just after the first semester, before getting into the next icky mind trauma focused semester. And I really, really wished for it. I prayed for it. I wanted to see. I thought when I had it, it would be done, because that's life before, no? And I wanted to deeply see the truth and not be false anymore. And I prayed and I prayed, and I was willing to give up everything for it. I thought I had to give up everything for it. And there were nights I would stay up and just pray. And TIFA came along as part of that praying, as one of the threads that offered all the right moments to come to that awakening. And then when it happened, it felt like, and I've heard from different people it happens in different ways, but for me it felt like a big explosion, where so many parts of my life that I'd thought I'd spent so many years building all of a sudden just came apart, from work to community to relationship to everything familiar, really. And then the training at the gym started of, okay, what was it that I thought it was? And now it feels like it's all just starting. And I get to see things and feel things fully, and it's deeply uncomfortable. And then it's a constant stop, and then it builds up, and then the desire to go on further keeps happening.
Mm.
It gets more and more refined, like you say, and every moment I think I'm somewhere, I realize I'm nowhere, and that is very deeply humbling.
Mm. It can also be super disoriented and confusing for people either at later stages in their life, or people who aren't, who don't have the robustness to be able to shoulder that. Yeah. Mm. Thank you for answering. I didn't actually know what your answer would be. This is something that I think of all the things that I assess and judge people about, like my critical awareness of humanity, that this is something that I truly believe is only stewarded and known by the individual themselves. And I will say that my career really showed itself to me in a magical way in 2016, and beyond, when I started working in India and teaching in India and doing spiritual work in India, because before then I'd done it everywhere else. But when I started working with Indians, there was such a epigenetic factor there that created not only an ease, but a ripeness, that when one is born into a Hindu field, there is this depth of understanding of the cycles of samskara and karma and dharma and something greater and bigger in a different way than kind of like a Christianity Jesus concept would offer. And so it was just so much easier, and it felt like it landed, like there was a suppleness and a ripeness. And so,
I guess that's why so many people come here and feel like putting on the saffron and putting on the beads and the costumes. Perhaps it helps, who knows, but I think it requires a very deep desire. And then it can happen anywhere. That's what my journey is telling me.
Yeah,
to anyone, anywhere. And it's And I know you've had your...
I would love for you to share a little bit about your recent journey in Guatemala and how that created time or space of crystallization, of synthesis.
Well, in Guatemala, I just came out of a 40-day silence as part of a course that I attended, and it was on many, it was, you know, an esoteric journey. It explored hermetics. It explored the Western sort of esoteric workings. And as part of that, it wasn't so much the theory or the you know, the stories of the course. It was the 40-day silence, and that was the journey. And what it crystallized, the 40-day journey was so beautiful because, you know, I had so many different people come out of it and speak into their journeys of it, you know, and I went into it really not knowing what was going to happen. And I come out of it and I say, it wasn't that I was meditating and I would go into these altered states, which I did sometimes. It really wasn't that for me. It was the sense of very deep integrity that came of going into something I was so deeply afraid of, and finding that sense of, something is flowing. And when I let it happen, and every day I wake up and I let something, this inner voice that I spent so many years fighting, you know, this perfectionist, this inner critic, I think what had really happened was me making friends with that voice. Through the 40-day silence of going, okay, what is it you want me to do? Let me do it and see what happens, you know. And so it was coming into a very deep alignment. And that meant that I was moving my body more than I ever have. It meant that I was very spontaneous in how I was doing things. I was deeply creative. In so many ways, I felt so deeply turned on, you know, by life. It was such a deeply erotic time.
Madness, Scorpio.
There you go. Yeah. And I discovered that I said, I want this to be difficult. And this is the Scorpio. I said, I want all the challenges. I want all the triggers and everything. I want to meet this journey. I don't want to hide. And so I would get them. And I had to, I think at the very heart of it, I had to sit with this thing of what happens in a spiritual awakening, you know, the sense of I'm going to get somewhere and I'm going to be this, maybe this person who's blissed out, you know. And it made me really deeply confront, what is it that I think I'm going to get by doing this, you know? Where do I think I'm going to go? And then this very profound shedding of, oh, I'm going to get nowhere. You know, and
there's nowhere else but here.
And that deep futility that comes from meeting life without story and without expectation. And I have to just sit with this moment. that it was a deepening into that. Very precious time. And I hope for anyone who's interested for them to find those spaces. It's so precious. And, you know, one of the silliest things was I chose not to smile at anyone when I didn't want to. And it was the most free, the most free I've ever felt in my life to just be completely true to how I was feeling in that moment. And if I just wanted to frown, if I just wanted to cry, to give permission to do that, which is so incredibly hard to do. And I see that now after the silence, you know, it's a gift.
Thank you for sharing. Through your sharing, I understand. Like my 40 days in silence was never intentionally 40 days. It was a month. And then I just couldn't bring myself to speak and it became 40. So I'm sure there's some kind of cyclical innovation that Chatti has that I just picked up on luckily in the field. And then also I have one of my favorite poems that I've written called My Name is Amnesia. Your sharing brought, I now see more in the architecture of that poetry. So thanks for that.
Andy's beautiful poem Amnesia is on the notes of the podcast, so please go and read it. We will be back in episode 2 to continue this conversation. Moving on to the future of the Institute for Aliveness and what's really required in the world today.
How's that episode for you? If you learned from that episode, pay it forward. Leave a 5-star review so others can find this content too. Or join one of our 1-week online fasting retreats. one of our short courses, or enroll in the longer health coach certification program. You can also make personal coaching appointments with our deeply embodied team. Whatever you do, don't let this moment pass you by. We send you much love from the TIFA headquarters, and we hope to see you soon. Head to theinstituteofaliveness.com for more info and resources.